Okay. Okay. All right. In our last lecture, we saw the class Array Linear List, which implements the interface linear list. Now, using instances of type Array Linear List, we can pretty much perform all of the operations you would like to perform on instances of linear lists. Now, it turns out that with linear lists, as well as with many of the other data structures we're going to be looking at this semester, there's a certain kind of operation people like to do often, and this operation involves examining all of the elements in an instance one at a time. So, for example, if you have a list of students in this class, you may want to find all of the elements or students in the class whose names are, or all the students whose name happens to be James. And one way to do this would be to go through all of the elements or all the students in the class one at a time, examining their name and checking which ones actually have the name James. Using an array linear list, we could perform this by first doing a get zero, which would get us the zeroth element in the class list, then a get one, get two, get three, get four, and so on, until we have exhausted all the elements in the list. Each time we get an element, we check the name, and if it is James, that's one of the students we were interested in. Okay. Now, this kind of examination of all the elements in a data structure one at a time is something that is commonly done in many applications of data structures. As a result, when we implement a data structure like a linear list using a class such as Array Linear List, we tend to augment the class with methods to support this sequential examination of all the elements in a linear list. And the idea being that by providing special support for this sequential examination, we will be able to perform this sequential examination in a more efficient manner than if we simply did a whole bunch of gets. Okay. All right, so the mechanism that is provided in object-oriented languages to support the sequential examination of elements in a data structure is called an iterator. And today we are going to study iterators. Okay. Now, as I said, an iterator basically permits you to examine all of the elements in a structure one at a time. And the way you do this is if you have, for example, an array linear list, let's say X here denotes an array linear list, and my intent is to examine all the elements in X one at a time. Okay. So then what I would do is I would first create an iterator for the array linear list X, and I would do that by invoking a method called iterator with a small I, as in X dot iterator. Okay. Now, in order for this to be a legal statement, the method iterator must be a method that is implemented in the class array linear list. And basically, what this method would do is it would just invoke the constructor for whatever class implements the methods that allow you to sequence through a list. Okay. That class which implements the methods that allow you to sequence through a list would be required to implement a Java interface called iterator with a capital I, and we shall see the methods of iterator with a capital I in a moment. Okay. All right, so the first thing we do is we create an iterator for the array linear list X whose elements I wish to examine one at a time. Okay. Having created that iterator using this method, okay, which, as I said, will simply invoke the constructor for whichever class implements the methods of the Java interface iterator. Okay. All right, so we create it and we assign it to a variable of type iterator, so ix. Okay. All right, so ix is going to be the iterator for x. Having created the iterator, we will then need methods that allow us to have this iterator go through the elements of the array linear list one at a time. And for that, we will use methods of the Java interface iterator. So the Java interface name begins with a capital I. Okay. Now, the methods of the Java interface iterator are, one is the method hasNext. Okay. And the way you use that is you take the iterator that was just created, that's IX, and you invoke the hasNext method for that iterator. Okay. And basically, this method returns the value true if and only if the array linear list X has a next element. Okay. All right, the second method that the interface iterator has is the method next. And if you did an ix.next, then this would basically throw an exception if there is no next element. That would typically happen if the array linear list was empty. Then the first time you call hasNext, you would get the value false. Okay. Now, if you were to do a next, knowing that there is no next element, well, then you would get an exception, which says, well, there is no next element. Okay. So if your array linear list was empty, then the very first time you did ix.next, you would get an exception because there is no element at all in the list, certainly not a next one. Now, the exception would also be thrown if you have a linear list that has three elements and you've gone and examined all three, and now you want to try and get a fourth one. Well, there isn't a fourth one. Okay. Now, if there is a next element, then the method next will return that element. Okay. The third method that is defined in the Java interface iterator is the remove method. As the heading here indicates, this is an optional method. By optional, what I mean is that classes that implement Java's interface iterator may or may not provide code to actually remove an element. Okay. And actually, if you go through the iterators that we have in our book, for almost all of them, the remove method doesn't really remove an element. Okay. I'll tell you what it does in a moment. But what this method is supposed to do is it's supposed to remove the last element that was returned by next. Okay. And if the method is not implemented, which means if you haven't written it to do this, well, then you still need to have some code there for remove. Because if you recall, once you have a class which says I implement iterator, well, then you're supposed to provide code for all of the methods that are defined in the interface iterator. And if remove is defined in the interface iterator as it is, a class that implements iterator has to provide some code for remove. And basically, when you're not interested in doing this, you would simply put in a statement in there where you end up throwing this exception which says, well, I'm really haven't implemented the remove method. Okay. So the remove method throws this exception if you haven't implemented it. If you have implemented it, well, then it is supposed to remove from your data structure the last element that was returned by the method next. Of course, you may not have even invoked the method next. Or when you invoke the method next, it might have thrown an exception because there was no next element. In those cases, you're supposed to throw an illegal state exception. Okay. And basically, that tells you that there was no element returned the most recent time that the method next was invoked. Okay. All right, so Java's interface iterator has three methods associated with it. There's the hasNext. It tells you whether or not there's a next method, whether or not there's a next element. There is the next method, which actually returns the next element. And then there is the remove method, which is optional, and most of the iterators that are there in the book don't really implement the remove method. When the remove method is implemented, it is supposed to return, it is supposed to remove the element that was returned in the most recent call to next. Now, if the most recent call to next didn't return an element because there was no next element, or if next had never been invoked in the first place, then remove throws an exception which says I'm in an illegal state. If the method hasn't been implemented, okay, then the code for remove throws an unsupported method exception. All right, let's see how we would use the methods of an iterator to examine all of the elements in a data structure. Okay. And as we'll see from this example, it doesn't really matter what data structure it is. Okay. All right, here's the code. All right, so let's suppose X represents some data structure. It could be an array linear list. It could be a chain. It could be data structures we haven't talked about yet, like graphs and trees. Okay. It doesn't really matter what it is. Okay. So long as you have implemented a method called little iterator for that class, well, then I can write this statement here. So this method, little iterator, gets me an instance of a big iterator. Okay. So I call that ix. I want to go through all the elements of x one at a time. And that's what happens here in this while loop. I say, while ix.hasNext, okay, examine the next element. Okay. Now, of course, examine is a method that you're going to have to write. And in examine, you'll do whatever you want. Once you get the next element, maybe in examine, you check the name field and see if name equals James. Okay. All right. So using these three lines of code, I can examine the elements in the data structure X, and I would use the same three lines of code irrespective of whether X is an array linear list, it's a chain, it's a tree, it's a graph, or it's any other structure that you may have code for, or even something that you haven't heard of to this time. Okay. So you get a uniform way to examine all of the elements in a data structure. Now, in the case of a linear list, as I said earlier, we could have achieved the same functionality by making use of a for loop such as this one, where you get the zeroth element of the linear list first, then you get the element with index 1, then the element with index 2, 3, 4, and so on. So in the context of a linear list, whether the linear list is represented as an array linear list or a chain or any other implementation of a linear list, this two-line code is equivalent to this three-line code. Now, the difference between using this three-line code versus this two-line code, first, of course, is that the three-line code works not only for data structures for which the method get exists, it'll also work for data structures for which there is no get method, so long as you have implemented iterator. Okay, this code only works when you have get. And for several data structures that we're going to see, it may not make any sense to define a get method. Okay, certainly one which is a get by index, or one that is easily adapted so that if you call the get many times, you would eventually get all of the elements in the data structure. All right, so in that sense, this is far more general. The other advantage we get by going the upper route versus the lower route is that quite often it is the case that we can write the iterator methods so that their complexity is quite a bit less than the complexity of the get method. Okay. For example, when we take a look at the class chain later today and in our next lecture, what we'll see is that the complexity of the get method for a chain is order of I. In which case, if you look at the time required to execute this loop here, or to perform all of the gets, we do a get 0, then a get 1, then a get 2, get 3, and if the size is n, you eventually do a get n minus 1. Okay. If you add up the times across all the gets, that's 0 plus 1 plus 2 plus 3 and so on up to n minus 1, that works out to order of n squared. Okay. So the time spent here across all the gets is order of n squared. On the other hand, as we'll see for a chain, okay, we can write the next method so that it only takes order one time for us to get the next one from our knowledge of the previous one that we had obtained. Okay. So in that case, for an n element list, each execution of next is order one. There are n such executions, and this while loop takes only order of n time. Okay. So since it is often the case that we can write the next method to run faster than the get method, it is often the case that using this general format actually works faster than using this syntax out here. Now, in the case of a array linear list, the get method runs in order of one time. Okay, so if you had n elements, this would take order of n time. The next method also runs in order of one time, so both are running in order of n. However, if you take a close look at the get method, any time you call get, it checks the index. Okay, so it checks whether I is less than 0 and whether I is bigger than size minus 1. And if so, it it throws an exception. Now, when you're working in this mode here, you know that you know where you were the last time. So each time somebody calls you to return the next, you don't have to check your present index against 0 because you know it was left valid from the previous call to next. And really, all you have to check is whether you have crossed the boundary, namely size minus 1. So you cut your checks from both a left-hand check and a right-hand check to simply having to make only a right-hand check. So you cut your work by about half in terms of checks, and as a result, using the iterator would actually run faster than using this by some constant factor. Okay. So even though both are order 1, this gives us a faster way for array linear lists as well. Okay. All right, now we're going to see plenty of iterators as we go through the course, so you get pretty used to this idea. Right, merits of an iterator, I've already gone through all of these, so let's skip that here. And a final statement about the class array linear list, or representing linear list as arrays. As I mentioned in an earlier lecture, Java does have an implementation of a linear list that employs an array. This one that I referred to here is one called java.util.arrayList. And this supports many methods in addition to the ones that we listed as methods for the interface linear list. Okay. Now, the names of the methods we used in the interface linear list are exactly the same as the names used in the class array list. The functionality is the same, the parameters are the same, and so on. If you look at the description of the class array linear list, you'll find that this class probably has 3 or 4 times as many methods as our class array linear list. Okay. Now, I mentioned in an earlier lecture that Java has another class that gives us the functionality of a linear list, namely vector. Now, in vector, the methods have different names and have different parameters and so on, so it doesn't correspond that closely to our discussion here in this class. All right, so with that, let's move on to the second popular way to represent data structures. And this one is one called the linear, it's called the linked representation. Okay. Now, unlike the array representation, in which successive elements of a linear list are stored in successive spots in memory, in the linked representation, successive elements of a list may be stored in any arbitrary spot, any arbitrary fashion in memory. So we decouple the order of elements in the linear list from the order in which these elements are stored in memory. In an array representation, the ordering of elements in the linear list is the same as that as the ordering in memory, but in a linked representation, this is not the case. Okay. Now, since we no longer preserve the ordering, the correct ordering of elements in memory, we need to keep explicit information with every single element that we have stored that tells us where is the next list element. And this explicit information is called a link or a pointer. Okay. Well, let's take a look at an example. Suppose we have the five-element linear list L, the elements being A through E. Okay. In our array representation, we would store the elements A, B, C through E in the same order in memory, beginning at position 0 of our array. Okay. In a linked representation, we could place these elements in any order we liked, and in particular, we don't have to use successive spots of memory. So we can throw them into any spot in memory that is available, and in addition to that, we can permute the elements in any fashion we like. Now, in order to be able to reconstruct the logical order of elements from our linear list, namely the for us to be able to say which was the 0th element, which was the 1th element, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, we need to keep explicit information called links or pointers. Okay. So, from the element whose index is 0, I keep a pointer or a link to this spot where the next element is stored. Okay. In the context of an array, this explicit information would simply be an integer. It would be a number which tells us which position of the array has that element. Okay. Then in B, we keep explicit information telling us where the next element of the list is, C. C in turn points to D, and D points to E. Okay. All right, so so the elements in a list have pointers to successive elements. The last element, E, has nowhere to point to, and its pointer is set to a default value, which we're going to call null. Okay. All right, so to recap, in a linked representation of a linear list, the element whose index is 0 has a pointer to the element whose index is 1. The element whose index is 1 has a pointer to the element whose index is 2. Then C points to D, and D points to E. E is the last element of the list, and the last element of the list has a null pointer. Okay. All right, to complete the representation, we need a way to access the 0th element of the list, and for that, we keep a variable called first node. Okay. So typically then, what you would do is you'd start using the pointer in first node. That would get us to the element whose index is 0. Then you could follow this pointer to get to the next element, follow this pointer to get to the next, follow that pointer and this pointer, and then finally, the pointer in here, null, tells you there are no other elements. Okay. Now, if you look at the previous picture, let me go back to it. Okay. In this picture, the pointers all kind of resemble a dish of spaghetti. You've got pointers crossing each other, being nested, and so on. And it's kind of hard to figure out the logical structure of the list, by which I mean the order in which the elements appeared in the list. So from this thing, it's kind of hard to say that your list was A, B, C, D, E. Okay. So we normally will not draw linear lists or linked linear lists in this fashion. Instead, we will draw them in this fashion here. We will take the elements and write them out in the order in which they appear in the linear list. With each element, we will add another field, which we'll call the link or pointer field. The fields shown in yellow we refer to as the data field, and the two things together we'll call a node. Okay. All right, so a node is comprised of a data field, a node is comprised of a link or pointer field. The linear list is drawn in the with the elements in the order you would expect to see them in a linear list. Zeroth element first, element 1, element 2, 3, and 4. Then the pointers go from left to right. The last element has the null pointer. The first node pointer points to the first node. That's the one that has element 0. Okay. All right, so this is how we will draw linked lists. Now, the linked list representation we have just seen is called a chain, also known as a singly linked list. Singly linked because there's only one pointer from each node. Okay. We'll later see structures where we have multiple pointers, 2, 3, 4. Okay. All right, so a chain, formally, it's a linked list in which each node represents one element. There's a linker pointer from one element to the next. Okay. And the last node has a null pointer. Okay. All right, the nodes that are used in a chain, we'll define a data type for them. We'll call that data type chain node. And this class is going to be in the package data structures. We don't envision any use for this class outside of the package data structures, so I'm giving it the default visibility, which is package visibility. Okay. I haven't said public, private, or protected here. I've left it as package. Anybody in the package data structures may make use of chain node, but outside of the package, you can't use it. Okay. Right. The instances of chain node will each have two data fields associated with them. One is element, its type is object, and the other one we're calling next. This is the link or pointer field. And the type of that is chain node. It simply tells you what the next node is. Okay. And then down here, we're going to put constructors for this class. Okay. Right, as you can see from this slide here, the class chain node is going to have three constructors. The first one has no parameters associated with it, and it does nothing. And basically, it leaves the data members with their default values. The next field has the value null, and the element field has the value null. Okay. Java automatically initializes those variables to null. You don't have to explicitly put something here to say, element equals null, next equals null. That would be redundant. Okay. All right, the next constructor allows the user to specify the value of the element field. Okay. And so what we do here in the code is we set the element field of the chain node by using the syntax this.element. Okay. I have to say this.element rather than simply element, because there is some ambiguity here, since the parameter for the method is element, and the field of the node I want to refer to is also element, I need to be able to distinguish between the parameter and the field of the node. And the way you do that is by using the keyword this. This refers to the particular instance of the class that you're currently using, okay, which is the node. So this.element refers to this field, whereas the element on the right side refers to that parameter. Okay. Now, we could have certainly avoided this ambiguity by changing the name of the parameter to, say, the element, in which case I could have written the simpler code element equals the element. Okay. Now, I've done this here simply to illustrate that there is a mechanism in Java to distinguish between parameter names that are the same as field names. And because of this mechanism, you don't have to go around inventing parameter names. simply to overcome the ambiguity that might arise if you use the same parameter name as the field it was intended for. Okay. All right, the third and last method for this constructor method allows you to specify both the element value and the value of the next field, and then these two lines of code here set the next field as well as the element field. Okay. Again, to avoid ambiguity or to resolve the ambiguity, I need to use the keyword this in front of the names element and next when I'm referring to element and next for the node versus element and next for the parameters. All right, so with that out of the way, let's take a look at how we would do some of the linear list operations when the linear list is represented as a chain. Okay. All right, so let's suppose we want to do a get zero. Okay. Now, when you do a get, the first thing we're going to do is check the index, make sure it's a valid index. And assuming it's valid, then we'd go and find the element that corresponds to that index and return it. Now, for our discussion, we're going to assume that the second part, after you've done the check index, finding and returning the element, is done by first taking a variable called desired node and positioning it to the node that contains the element you want to return, and then we'll return the data field of the desired node. Okay. So for a get zero, the desired node is actually the one that first node is pointing to. So we could simply say desired node equals first node, and then we would say return desired node dot data. All right, if you want to do a get one, then the desired node is this one. Okay. So from first node, we have to follow the next field. So I'll have to do a first node dot next. Okay. So desired node is first node dot next. Now desired node is here. And then I could say return desired node dot data. If you want to do a get two, then starting at first node, a dot next gets me here, and another dot next gets me there. So I got to do two dot nexts. Okay. And once a desired node has been updated in this fashion, then I could say return desired node dot data. Okay. All right, now suppose we're doing a get five. Yeah, certainly if you do a get 5, it'll kind of fail in the check index because my elements only index 0 through 4. Okay. Let's for a moment assume that we didn't perform the check index part, and we just continued with updating desired node by using the proper number of dot nexts. Now, if you recall from the previous examples, when you're doing a get 0, we don't use a dot next. If you do a get 1, it's one dot next. If you do a get two, it's two dot nexts. If you do a get five, it'll be five dot nexts. Okay. So you start from here, the first dot next, the second, the third, the fourth, and the fifth dot next would take out the value null. Okay. So if you did first node followed by five dot nexts, the value of desired node would be null. Okay. Right now, let's see what happens if you do six dot nexts. So that'd be kind of like a get six, okay. Okay. So if you do six of these, we know that five would leave you with the value of desired node equal to null. If you do a sixth one, then you're going to be doing a null dot next. Okay. And when you try to do a null dot next, that's when the computer gets really upset with you. Okay. So it's something to be careful about, that when you're moving around with pointers, you often end up in a state where one of your variables ends up having the value null. And at that time, you shouldn't find yourself doing a null dot something. If you do that, the computer gets upset. And the way it lets you know it's upset is it throws a null pointer exception. Okay. Now, as you go through your homework, the first assignment where you are using pointers, you will find yourself getting null pointer exceptions. That's kind of universal, nothing to get upset about. It happens to everyone. And you have to know that the reason you're getting it is that one of your variables, which was falling through nodes, has managed to end up with the value null, and you're now trying to do a null dot something. Okay. All right, let's take a look at the remove operation. Right, suppose you want to remove the element whose index is 0. Of course, the first thing you do is check index, make sure you're removing a valid element. Okay. So to remove the element whose index is 0, basically what we have to do is the 0th element is the one that first node points to. You have to essentially change the pointer from first node so it's no longer pointing here, but it points over there. And then you got to return the element in that node. Okay. So we got to change this pointer. Now, when you change the pointer in first node, you automatically lose that one. Okay. All right, so the moment you set, you execute a line such as this, first node equals first node.next. The value of first node changes. It ends up pointing here, which means it's no longer pointing out there. Now, this accomplishes the remove. Notice that we haven't bothered to change the pointer in this field. Okay. In this node, this pointer still comes here, but this node is no longer part of our chain. Okay. It's not part of our chain because the chain begins at first node, and then you follow next, 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 and that defines the chain. And using that mechanism, there's no way for you to get to this node. Therefore, this one is no longer part of the chain. All right, so to do a remove 0, we simply execute this line, first node equals first node.next. And since the way we have defined remove, you also need to return the value in this node, the data element. It would be advisable before you did this that you save this element. So maybe you define a variable here of type object, which says element to return equals first node.data. And then down here, you could return element to return. Well, let's do a remove 2. To remove 2, okay, this is the one we want to remove, okay? And for that, what we'll do is we'll first get ourselves to the node just before the one we want to remove, okay? Now, since we're not, we've handled the case of remove 0 already, that's the only case where you don't have a node before the one you want to remove. So there'll always be a node just before the node that's to be removed. Okay. And so we're going to get here. So in this case, that would just mean that we'll do before node equals first node.next. Okay. All right, once you come here, okay, then we're going to change the pointer in the before node. We need to have this pointer come over here, and that would effectively remove this node along with that element from our chain. So that's what we'd like to do. And once you effect the change in that pointer, you end up losing this link because that field cannot have two values at the same time. Okay. Right, we effect that pointer change by using this code here, which says before node.next, so we're changing the value in this upper field here, equals before node.next.next, which is this node here. All right, so that's a remove 2. Okay. All right, let's take a look finally at the add operation. Here, too, we're going to look at it as two cases. One is adding with index 0, and the next is adding with an index other than 0. As before, we assume that you've checked the index, you've made sure it's a valid index for the add operation. Okay. So adding with index 0 means you're going to be adding to the left of the first node. So the first thing we're going to do is get a node, and we're going to set its data and link fields. Okay. So we get a node, we're going to set its data field to F, we're going to set its link field so that it points to the first node. That's how it's supposed to be when you're done. Okay. All right, so that's done using a statement such as new chain node. So we're going to create a new chain node. That's going to be this one here. We'll call the constructor that allows you to set the element field as well as the pointer field. So we set the element field to F, we set the pointer field next to point to what will then become the second node in the chain. All right, having done this, we then need to update first node. First node should no longer be here, it should be over there. Okay. And once you do that update, this other pointer that's shown here kind of disappears. Okay. So we accomplish that by simply saying first node equals new node. Right, we can put all of this thing together into a single line, which says, you create a new chain node, set its element field to F, set its pointer field to first node. So that gets us this node that is shown here, this kind of greenish node. And it sets that pointer field, and it sets the element field. Okay, and then we assign this node to the variable first node. Okay, so first node equals that. Okay. All right, let's take a look at the second case for an add. And in the second case, we're adding somewhere other than the left end of the chain. Okay. All right, in this example, we're going to add the element F so that its index is 3 following the add, so 0, 1, 2. So 3 means it has to come between the C and the D. Okay. And to place a new node here, we're going to first find the node whose index is 2. That's one less than the index of the new element, okay, namely C. Okay. So that's the before node. Okay. And then the new node we're going to create for the element F is going to lie just after the before node and before the node that is currently coming after the before node. Okay, so in between the C and the D. Okay. So I create a new node and set its fields. Okay. So the new node will have data field F, and its next field is going to point to the node just after the before node, so that's before node.next. Okay. And that's done using this code. Okay. All right, you can verify that this works correctly even if you're putting something out here. Okay. Even if you're putting something here, then this would be the before node. Before node.next would be null, and the pointer in the new node you're putting here should have the value null, and this code would do that. Okay. All right, the final thing we need to do is we need to set a pointer from the before node to the newly created node. Okay. So we need to set this pointer here, and once we set this pointer, we would end up breaking that one automatically. And so once we've set this pointer, we would then have a structure which begins at first node, goes to B, goes to C, then the pointer takes us to F, and this pointer takes you to D, and then to E, and then null tells you there's nothing else. Okay. Right, the way we get this then is just simply saying before node.next equals new node. Okay. All right, so to add somewhere other than the left end, okay, we first find the before node. Then we create a node, set its fields, and then we change the pointer in before node to point to the new node. Now we can combine all these steps into two steps. Okay. In the first step, you find the before node, and then in the second step, we're going to create the node and also change the pointer in C. And so that is, on the right side, you create the new node, you set its element field, and you set its next field. And then this assignment here changes the next field or the pointer in C so that it points to the new node. Okay. All right, so the use of, so having defined a constructor that allows us to set both the fields kind of simplifies the code. You don't have to first create a new node and then set the fields one by one every time you create a new node. You can do all that in one shot by using the appropriate constructor. Okay. All right, so basically what we've seen so far is we've seen an alternative way to represent a linear list, alternative to the array representation. We aren't going to use an array anymore. We're going to use a collection of nodes of type chain node. Each element will sit in a chain node of its own. Chain nodes are linked together using a field called next. The last node in the chain has a null field. And the first node in the chain is pointed to or at by a variable called first node. And then we've seen how you can perform the basic operations for a linear list, the get operation. You'd have noticed in the get operation that the time required for the get operation depends on which element you're getting. If you're getting the element whose index is 0, well, you don't have to follow any next fields that fast. If you want to get the element whose index is 1, a little bit more work, you got to follow one pointer. You want to get the element whose index is 2, even more work, you got to follow two pointers, and so on. So if you want to get the element whose index is I, that would take you order of I time. Okay. Now we saw how to perform the remove and the add operations. Now in the remove and add operations, once you find where you have to place the element, you don't have to shift all the elements that are to its right to either make place for the newly inserted one or to occupy the space previously occupied by the one you removed. Okay, so that's different from the array representation where you got to shift everything to the right one spot left following a remove, or you got to shift everything to the right one spot to the right preceding an add. Okay, so there are some differences in how you do operations. This affects the relative performance of the operations from when done in an array linear list as opposed to when they're done using pointers or a chain. Now, in the next class, we're going to take a look at the class chain, which actually implements this representation of a linear list, the singly linked or chain representation. It'll be a good idea if before you come to the next class, you've actually gone through the code for chains, so you have some basic understanding of what it looks like, and that way, during class, you could help focus the discussion on those parts of the code where you have a problem understanding. Okay. All right, so I guess we're going to stop here for today. Thank you.